If you're operating in an urban environment and you want to integrate your delivery drone, you need to also coordinate with all these other delivery drones that might be part of the airspace and all that. So through that, I learned that we actually maybe can apply everything that we've learned as part of that domain to a larger domain, which is can we actually come up with a new traffic management infrastructure that can solve a lot of those coordination problems that are underlying.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstad takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
Welcome to the Hangar X podcast. This is where innovators and operators and some of the smartest people in the world come to actually figure out what's happening next in aerospace. And we have one of the smartest people in this entire drone industry on with us today. Mirnaz, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and today's episode is sponsored by Hangar X Daily. We read 800 to 2,000 articles a day with an AI engine we developed and distill it down to the top, what we believe are top 5 to 8 articles that you need to read, why you need to read them with our research put in there with what are the threads for decision making. So go to hangarxdaily.com and you can sign up for that. And now we're going to talk today about autonomy. And if autonomy is going to scale, we were just kind of talking about this off camera. It's not about removing humans. It's actually about humans learning from the autonomous systems and vice versa so that we can actually create an infrastructure in the future. Because one of the things that, you know, we've talked about here on the podcast, Mirnaz, is I believe the, you know, the traffic management, the communications, the infrastructure, there's so many complexities and problems to solve, you know, between in this airspace. When we talk about, you know, commercial airliners and general aviation today, but now we're looking at increasing what might be flying out there by orders of magnitude, hundreds of thousands, maybe a million globally on any given day. And how do we solve that so it's safe, communities accept it, it's reliable in a way that we can use it from, you know, delivering groceries to drone as a first responder to fighting fires. But I mean, there's a lot that's going to be, you know, solving food deserts, but so that's what we're going to be talking about today. So a little background. Mirnaz, you are a PhD candidate at Cornell University. And so everybody out there listening, if you do some research, the work that you and your team are doing has come up a number of times, and I started bookmarking it. And then I met a good friend of mine, and you guys are actually, you know, part of the same family. You're actually related. And she was bragging about you. And then so I went deeper. I'm like, okay, we need to have you on. So you're at Cornell and you're working with a team that's actually focused on the future and, you know, what's really happening and where this is going. Some cutting edge things around autonomy in real world operations. How do we use simulations and synthetic data to kind of guide what we're doing, where we're going, and what does AI driven traffic management, how do we really harness AI for this traffic management, air mobility, so that we can really scale it in an effective, cost-effective, operationally effective, safe way. And we're also going to talk about, because I think I love how the universities and Cornell are getting involved, right? We talked about some of the people that are commercially in the space that you're in, and where does Cornell kind of fit into that, you know, collaborate, synthesis, synergy, and there's some great things there. So, you know, with that, maybe let's just start with this. So when people hear the word autonomy, you know, what comes to mind, right? Some, I think almost like a robot, the human's been removed. It's just doing its thing, comes back, does its thing, delivers its cargo, and you're not touching a button. But you guys kind of had a little different approach or philosophy about what autonomy should be or could be. So could you start there and share with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of how we think about autonomy is that You cannot have a system just completely have humans out of the loop. So we are thinking about autonomy that we call collaborative autonomy, which means that usually when you think about all these systems, for example, if you think about drones, they are going to be integrated in environments that actually involve a lot of human operators, involve a lot of other drones around them. So an environment that we call is multi-agent and also multi-operator. So for example, a very easy example is search and rescue. So if you think about a drone wanting to be integrated as part of a search and rescue response, you cannot say that, okay, we're going to remove all the search and rescue like human operators because we don't need them anymore. Actually, you will. They are a very important part of the whole mission and the mission task planning and how they go conduct a rescue operations, but maybe drones can be integrated to help them search an area faster or provide the imagery faster. So it's kind of this environment where you want both of them to work together in a way that you don't still focus from the mission commanders or operators as part of the operation, so that they are focused all the time on easy tasks like navigating a drone. You want the drone to be able to do that while it is also aware that it's part of a mission or operation that involves other human operators and other drones as part of it. So that type of an autonomy development in our work is called collaborative autonomy, where the autonomy on board the drone enables it to work on its own on tasks that are like navigation, but also are able to collaborate with other drones and human operators to like help them stay in the loop.
Yeah, I'm coordinating the sensors, I'm taking that data to the field teams that are out there, and I'm also guessing what the autonomy also help facilitates is a one-to-many. If I'm an operator and I can control four or five drones, so they each have areas of responsibility, then it only takes one person on the team, a human, to actually provide all of that intelligence, you know, ISR, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance of an area versus having four or five people each flying a drone. Is that fair?
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. And now, before we kind of get into your project, I found this fascinating. You're teaching drones to learn from human behavior,
yes.
Right? And some of these are very complex environments. And then the humans get feedback and learn from what the drone learned by observing. And then there's this loop of continuous learning, continuous improvement. So
yes.
how did you put that together and start it?
Yeah, so one area that we started working on was initially like public safety and search and rescue. And when you are involved in that space, I always say it's one of the most challenging operational scenarios that you can work in, because everything about an environment that you're operating in is very dynamic. You cannot know much of the information beforehand. There are many unknown unknowns involved. And something that we learned by working with public safety operators in that environment is that they are very good at like through years and years of experience coming up with how to, for example, plan the tasks that they want to operate in the environment. So for example, breaking those tasks, how do you break a mission? How do you conduct a search? Like, how would you go about, if you're searching a very big area for a missing person case, how do you even go about that? And there are processes that these operators have come up with, and they are very, like, they're very much an expert in doing all those tasks that are not very easy to, like, train, or like in the machine learning environment, it's not very easy to like have a drone navigate like that. It involves a lot of intuition and also information from like these experts that are involved in the domain. So one thing that we did is that we actually collaborated with a lot of public safety organizations and collected a lot of data on how actual human experts go about the missions and operations and task planning that is involved and varies very complex as part of those operations. And we had this kind of hypothesis that if we collect enough data, maybe we can train machine learning models that can pick up on those tasks and can learn those tasks in order to be able to operate more intuitively alongside those operators as part of these missions. And so that is what we set to do. And like, that was our questions. And we believed without that human data or like expert data information, we won't be able to do that. And also the drones won't be able to operate alongside these operators and provide more value to them as part of these missions. So that's kind of where it started. And more recently, we are also applying it in wildfire, for example, response operations, where it can like provide a lot of value as well.
Now, this has grown into a full project, correct?
Yes.
Now, what's the name of the project?
So that is, I believe you're referring to Project Orion.
I am, yep.
NASA, when NASA got involved, yes.
Okay, so you gather all this data, you start applying machine learning, you start looking at, you know, here's what we could do. But you also had mentioned, and you've written about this too, some of the infrastructure and communications. You know, if I'm going to use the drone to do what we've learned, there's other things that all have to be in place. So when did you realize that what we're stepping into is even more complex than we realized?
Yeah, so that's a great question, actually. So we were operating in this public safety domain at the beginning, as I mentioned, which was very focused on just, let's see if we can push the autonomy a bit further. So, for example, beyond navigation autonomy and all that. And then we realized a lot of the challenges that we are solving are all about this coordination and this multi-agent environments that we deal with. So many drones, many human operators, but the underlying like limitation or like the core issue was that all of these operators and drones needed to coordinate together. And then at the time I was involved with a lot of working groups at NASA where we were also investigating the limitations that we have for air traffic management for all these drones that need to be integrated as part of the aerospace. I always thought that for delivery drones or like when you think about it in the context of a structured urban aerospace environment, a lot of those coordination challenges won't like be an issue. I thought it's an easier environment, but through those working groups, I learned that no, this kind of coordination that needs to happen between all these different drones is actually also a problem within the aerospace as a whole. Like if you're operating in an urban environment and you want to integrate your delivery drone, you need to also coordinate with all these other delivery drones that might be part of the aerospace and all that. So through that, I learned that we actually maybe can apply everything that we've learned as part of that domain to a larger domain, which is can we actually come up with a new traffic management infrastructure that can solve a lot of those coordination problems that are underlying all these different operations and underlying what we lack currently as part of the aerospace infrastructure. So that's where Project Orion kind of comes along and the NASA grant that we got to go and understand if we can build such a thing.
And are you going to be able to build such a thing?
Yeah, so through the past like 2 years, we've actually prototyped an infrastructure. We've done a lot of demos with a lot of stakeholders, and we are very happy with where we are at right now because we've actually a report that is coming out of our project that is informing how to scale the current traffic management systems with tactical deconfliction and communication infrastructure that is needed for all these operators to integrate into the aerospace, which I'm very proud of. And also we were able to showcase a complete new test infrastructure that can really help OEMs and operators within the space to like take their operations to the next step and like help them like test their components in like drones for what is to come as part of FAA and like FAA BVLOS operational environments. And we think that is going to really be a game changer in terms of how we can make sure that these operations are safe and how are we investigating these drone operations as part of these very complex BVLOS drone operations that are part of the future.
Could you give me a practical example of that? Let's just say I'm an OEM and I have a drone that does something and I want to operate that environment.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that we realized through the through our work on the NASA funded project is that we actually lack large scale test infrastructure to understand how would you go about testing your drones when you are talking about very large scale, high volume operations. So one of the things is that right now we have a lot of test sites nationwide that are operated by FAA and FAA designated, where you can go and have your drone tested. Then you want to test different sides of it, like software, hardware, and you want to test, for example, your navigation components and all that. But the problem that we saw was that these test sites and the places where you can operate a drone and test your drone are somehow, I call it that they are very boring, meaning that they are usually part of these remote operational areas where you don't see.
So it doesn't really mirror the kind of environment you'd have like in Atlanta or, Denver or San Diego. It's remote, it's rural, you got some airspaces and radars and we can test the basics, but it doesn't really get challenged.
Exactly. That was exactly the problem as we saw it. And the problem was that in our project, we are really investigating the next generation of traffic management systems. So in our world, everything is large scale, high volume operations. And we realized that when we are in the simulation system, we can create these big, larger scale city operations. We can have thousands of drones as part of these operations. But when we are going to deploy and test it on the actual hardware and the actual drones, we are very limited. We are in a remote area. There is no buildings around to challenge our sensor systems. There are no, for example, as part of our project, we wanted to see what happens if you have 200 drones operating per square kilometer. So that's a very high volume operation. But we realized that you cannot go out there and say that, okay, we will fly 200 drones and then let's see what happens. So there were a lot of challenges that we saw as part of the test infrastructure that is currently available to the operators and OEMs, and it was available to us as well, but we saw that as a very limiting factor. So one of the things that we set to do was, how can we bring that environments, that those rich environments that we have in simulation, closer to how you operate and what you have access to in the physical test site environment? And that kind of goes into that test infrastructure that we built, which is what we call real-time simulations, where you have these simulations operating in real time embedded on the hardware or the drones that you have. And it will make the drones kind of see the environment around them exactly as the environment you have in the simulation in real time, but on top of the physical environment. So for example, if you bring a drone to a test site and you have this system on board it, you can really transfer your physical test site environment to a city environment around your drone. And this happens by kind of this environment reconstruction on top of the physical environment. So you can kind of take advantage of both environments in real time. And now you can really challenge the hardware and the drone, and you can make it see obstacles that might not be there. You can make it see other agents around it that might not be there, but you will see the real reaction on the actual hardware. And this really takes the testing to the next level because of all of those operational complexities that you can now add on top of the physical test site environment that you have access to.
So Murnaz, you know what that makes me think of? The movie The Matrix. And you're actually building the city, and then the drone's in there, but it's not really in there, but it thinks it is. And then we can, right? And the simulations that you do, I grew up and did a lot of military training. And, back 30 years ago, the simulators were not the best training. It was good for procedures and emergencies and understanding systems, but real-world flying, real-world situations, and they've gotten a lot better. What have you found with the simulations? And then when you actually do real-world testing, how accurate is it? How much is it guiding you? Because I know there's some places that are getting to a point where we might not even have to do the real world because the simulation can actually have such fidelity.
Yeah, so there are a couple of challenges technically that we had to solve because there, as you mentioned, there is a lot of work being done in the simulations of systems and infrastructures. But the problem is that no matter how high fidelity you push the simulation, the problem is that there is always, if you're just sticking to simulations, there is always a simulation, what we call a simulation to real gap, which is that the simulation environment is always somehow like off from what you have access to in the real world, and like the dynamics and the physics of it all is never one-on-one. So if you just stick to simulations, you're always simplifying some parameters that specifically in aerospace, it's not very good to do because you don't want to stick just to simulations and you want to actually stress test your actual hardware and actual drones. So the thing that we had to do is that, and we saw as a gap, is that yeah, we don't want just offline simulation. And now we want to make things real time. But the problem, as you exactly mentioned it, is that if you want both of the environments to be reconstructed in real time, you really have to think about two things. One is latency and one is the scale. Because if your drone is seeing the kind of this virtualized operational context by a huge latency, then it is thinking about a drone that is not like seeing it in time, and maybe there is another real drone around it that it will like make it think the context is off, and then it won't react in time. So what we had to actually do technically is that we had to bring down the latency between the real-time reconstruction of the simulation environment on top of the physical environment to under 5 milliseconds. So that is the real time kind of bar that we had to set for ourselves to really push this. And another thing is the scale. So the scale, when you have real time simulations embedded, needs to really be one-on-one. So if every meter in the simulated like operational context that is built on top of the physical environments need to match exactly to every meter in the physical environment to really match the scale, or otherwise everything that is off is going to affect how you are testing the real hardware as part of it. But the advantage of doing it, which we did, is that now you can really have that actual hardware and the actual flight tested, and you can increase the value of field test hours or flight hours that you're getting out of your real drone.
Yeah, and that said, there's a lot of conversation right now around synthetic data. Yeah. So could you talk about what it is and why either an operator or maybe somebody trying to build a drone should understand and care about what the synthetic data is?
So synthetic data kind of refers to any data that you collect from your simulation environment. So let's say you want to train a navigation model that you want on board your drone to navigate these challenging environments. So one thing you can do is that you can have a model in the simulation that represents your actual drone fly in these very challenging different environments and collect that data from the simulation environment.
So could I test a GPS denied environment with something like that?
Yes, exactly. Yep. So let's say you want to train a vision model for vision navigation, which is exactly what is being used for GPS denied environments. And the way you would go about it is that the problem is that you would need a lot of data. But again, as I mentioned, because we are very kind of limited by what we can collect in the real world, we usually always like turn to simulation. So what you would do is that you would have the drone collect that data in the simulation, high fidelity simulation environment, and you would train your model. And then again, you would need to think about that sim to real gap, which even in the vision world always also comes up. So you would also need to augment that data with the real flight operational data that you would have, and then you can really push that model to do those vision type navigations.
Yeah, and you guys are doing a lot of work with kind of AI driven, you know, navigation, autonomy. What you and the whole team, what is the problem that you think you need to solve next that's keeping you all up at night?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there are two problems that right now we are addressing. One of the problems, exactly like you mentioned, is a vision-based navigation system, because actually recently we did a demo for a drone collision that happened back in October, where two delivery drones actually crashed into a crane in Arizona. And one of the demos that we wanted to do, and we did, is to recreate that whole operational environment, which was a construction site in an urban environment, and we had to like re-implement this crane that was operating in the area. And when you think about it, in that context, you really need to push the vision system and the sensor system on the drone to be able to detect the crane and the beam, and it's very hard to do. But another thing that we had to even push for is that there was not just one delivery drone that crashed. There were two delivery drones operating back to back, and both of them crashed into the crane because of this environment, because of this occlusion that kind of happens, which we call dynamic occlusion, that you would need to solve as part of the vision stack. So that was really hard to really do as part of what we were working on. But now we even pushed it further, where we enable multiple drones to send each other in valuable information about their context, so that if one drone, for example, is not seeing the crane, it can still learn about the crane's existence and how it is operating through exchanging information or data with other drones that are seeing it, in what we call cooperative perception. So kind of really pushing.
Do you think, let's say Manas flying and Amazon and Google Wing and Speedbird, let's just say, you know, different groups are operating. And there's different, you know, and there's also some great companies doing UTM, Aloft and ANRA and others, right? So you have this very complex system. We're going to have to figure out interoperability. But what are some of the practical things that have to happen to allow what you just said to happen? Because that sounds like where we need to go. I mean, clearly.
Exactly. So that is actually what we are actively working on, and we are trying to also like work with the FAA to like come up with what we call a concept of operations. Because like you mentioned, we need to come up with the standards. Like, for example, in our projects, we've realized that tactical deconfliction and this exchanging of data between different drones and operators is really important and something that we currently lack data, and we need to collect a lot of data to inform how that tactical deconfliction needs to happen. For example, what messages needs to be sent between the operators and different drones? How should those messages be, like what fields do they need to have and all that? So by coming up with these concepts of operations and like putting reports together, we can really understand what that like layer should look like, what data needs to exchange between different operators, what communication components are required to be part of this like system in UTM, and like what are like the equipage and all that that goes as part of it to enable all of this. So the thing we are doing is to talk with a lot of operators, like really come up with this concept, and maybe try to work with FAA and all these standard bodies to be able to really make this interoperable.
Yeah, and Mirnaz, we talked a little bit earlier. Share about, you know, what is Cornell's, and I think academia in general, what is their kind of their role that they're playing right now when so much is advancing in aerospace, in drones? Because I asked you earlier about some of the other companies who are doing UTM platforms. And you're like, oh, they're awesome. But we're trying to think ahead. We're almost thinking where that puck's going 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years down the road. So share a little bit about your role, and anybody listening, if they're an OEM, they're an operator, you know, large scale, you know, how do they look at what you're doing, tap in, find more, talk about some of your simulations? So kind of give all of us a briefing on where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, in terms of like how we are thinking about this, a lot of the operators within the space, they are working at a layer that we call strategic deconfliction for UTM and advanced air mobility. But as we work on this research and our NASA-funded work, we are thinking about beyond strategic, what needs to happen and like how should we think about UTM as the operations really scale. So for real high volume UTM in dense mixed aerospace operations. So we did a lot of work and are doing a lot of work on tactical separation provision and the backstop collision avoidance and detect and avoid, which are the areas where we felt like there is a lot of data gap. And our work is really informing those layers that are going to be on top of strategic deconfliction. So any operator listening, we are like doing the work and we are putting out our technical report is going to be published soon. And we are putting out our work and data that we've collected through thousands and millions of trajectories of flight operations that we've done and putting out what needs to like go as part of that so they can think about it early, because something that really matters for the operators is that anything that needs to happen or any density breakpoints that they need to be aware of, they need to be aware of it earlier. So if there is any hardware components that needs to be integrated, they know about it earlier. And we did a lot of work on the communication side as well. We actually collaborated with Qualcomm to understand if some of the vehicle-to-vehicle communication technologies, which we call V2V, can be really like kind of used in this space to enable the communication requirements for the tactical layers that we investigated. And another work that we are doing is that we are working with the test sites across the nation, starting maybe from California, to integrate this test infrastructure that we've built as part of our project to these test sites, so we can really open it up to the OEMs and operators to test their drones similarly to how we did as part of this project. And that I'm very excited about, because I believe that is a very important component for OEMs and operators to have access to, because they can not only stress test their drones, they can also recreate a lot of large scale operations and collect data and show evidence for that are going to be really important for the BV loss operations that are going to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mirnaz, I am so impressed. And when your tech report comes out, let's come back on. And maybe it's you and your team. We do a panel. But it would be great to debrief. And even if you want to bring on any of the key operators, people you gather data with, whether it was law enforcement or whatever, some of the verticals. But it would be really fun to do a webinar. And really, because what you're talking about, I'm just thinking that, you know, that's information people are going to really want. And then they're going to have questions. Right. And I'm sure there's ways they can gauge with you. So open invitation back. So, you know, with that, if you were one of those people right now listening, you know, at that point, a founder, an operator right now, with everything happening and kind of your view that you have, which is unique, what do you think their focus should be to be able to create a solution that really can grow in scale profitably and economically and safe?
I think there are two things that right now matter most. One is infrastructure. I do think the technology is already there. Like the drones that we have, both in all of the domains, actually inspection, delivery, agriculture, the technology is really there. The problem is that we lack the infrastructure to actually push these drones out there and integrate them in the aerospace in a way that is safe. And I feel like as an industry, we do need to come together to make sure that infrastructure is put in place, but also not to just think about near-term solutions. Like, for example, I do recognize that, for example, strategic deconfliction and the solutions and services we are thinking about right now are going to be absolutely enough for maybe not that larger scale, like high-volume operations, and that is enough for maybe the next 5 years. But I do always believe that there is a benefit to think beyond that. So if we are thinking about actual scalable infrastructures, we can start implementing them now, and we can really guarantee that we are going to see a lot of drones out there, and then we are not going to be like coming back to it and maybe implement the next step instead let's put out a scalable infrastructure out there and make sure we are really pushing this technology forward and seeing them as part of the aerospace across the nation and in all operational environments. So that is something that I believe is important. And the second thing is, of course, the safety. And that is again, the work I mentioned that I believe we need to do as part of the test sites and the test infrastructure, because I feel like that is always underestimated, but it's a very important piece of all of this, because if we can actually come up with a way that we can reliably say that these drones can operate out there and it is safe, it's important not just operationally, but also for the public perception and like really changing how they rely on the technology or they see it. So I do believe those are the key things to think about.
That's awesome. Very well said. So keep knocking them alive out there. And look forward to having you back on. And thank you for all the work that you and your team are doing. And by the way, so what's your PhD in? I know you're a PhD candidate. I forgot to ask you that.
Yeah, so my PhD is very much focused on that autonomy part of things. So it's okay. On collaborative autonomy for drones, but very specifically on the multi-agent machine learning that I mentioned that are necessary to enable this collaborative autonomy. So it's kind of very much focused on the machine learning side of it, but it all goes under that same umbrella.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad there's people like you who are 1,000 times smarter than me solving some of this stuff. So keep it up, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to it.